I think Brexit speaks for itself in terms of not working out so much for the UK. And also it showed how much the EU can actually unite. And I don't really believe another country will follow that route. Yeah, exactly. I spend my days criticizing the EU more than I plead for its existence, let's say. But that's the debate we need to have, right? What type of Europe do we want to have? Because the debate whether or not we want to have a European Union, for me, it's a question of the past.
Du hører på Liberal Halvtime, en podcast fra Tankesmien Civita.
Welcome to Liberal Halvtime. My name is Mathilde Fasting, and today I'm joined by Christelle Saval, who is the vice president of GEF, or GEF Europe. We're going to talk about the European Union, and this is, of course, one episode in the large podcast project that we have about the European Union. So, first of all, welcome to the podcast, Christelle.
Hello, thank you for having me.
You have to explain to us what GEF is, because GEF is G-E-F, and what is that?
So GEF, that's easy for me to explain. So GEF is the Young European Federalist. So we are a pan-European organization. We are transpartisan, which means we have a political view, federalism, but we do not care for party politics in a way that we are not in a party or in another, or member or from all horizon, if I may say. Federalism. So we stand for peace, we stand for democracy, we stand for European values and human rights. So our solution is federalism because we want global peace. And we have a network of 10,000 members across 37 countries.
Mm. How big is your organization that you are vice president of? How many people are you?
So in, at the European level, we have about 30 people elected. We have a staff of 10 people. And as I was saying, across Europe, we have 10,000 members and many more people that are just coming in for events or some civilized power actions.
So we'll have to start with a question that I asked you in an interview, because you were also part of an interview series that we are doing in a project about Europe in Civitas. So start to tell us about your thoughts of the development of the European Union in light of all the things that has happened lately. And, well, you know, we can go back to the migration crisis, but we could also just go back a couple of years. So it depends on how you would like to do that. And just give us your general views on the European Union and how it functions and how it all goes when it comes to these things.
I would say if one thing is certain in the 2020s, is that nothing's certain. So we had major crisis, but with major crisis, we had also major leap of integration, things that we didn't think were possible, like common debt happened, things we didn't think would be on the agenda, like enlargement or back. So I would say we are in a midst of transformations. So there's a lot of dangers, but there's also a lot of hope for the future of Europe. I'm thinking now there's clear path also for treaty change. There is difficult clear path, but there is a recognition of the need for a clear integration, but also less intergovernmentalism, which means that the veto is now in question in terms of making decision at the European level. So we see a lot of changes that go towards federalism.
Mm. How do you think, or how much do you think these things are caused by what we can term crises? Like you just said, the pandemic, you have the war in Ukraine, different things mentioned, crisis in different aspects. Do you think is driving these developments?
It's clearly the main driver, but it's the whole project of the European Union that has been driven by crisis since the beginning. The main driver of the European Union is war. It was the Second World War, and now it's the war of aggression against Ukraine. It's not something that changed so much. We made major integration movements thanks to crisis, because we had to stand up and unite and see that actually to get to sovereignty, we have to pull ourselves together, because sovereignty is the possibility to change things, and alone we can't change them.
So when you're talking about federalism, and that's the F in the Jeff organization, how do you see that different European countries, European Union member countries, and also countries wanting to become members of the European Union, how do they see this, these things that you are arguing for? For instance, first, maybe the countries in the European Union, and then we can take and have a look at other countries afterwards. But start with the countries within the Union. How do they look upon these things?
I would say we went from calling it the F word, mainly because of the UK, to now seeing it more mainstream as a topic or as a word. I see it more and more in articles, in the press. It was also in the government coalition agreement in Germany. So we see more and more that at least it's on the agenda, on the topic for people to discuss. Of course, we're not in a moment where everyone agrees with it, but that was never the hope for a couple of years movement, right? But at least people are now getting accustomed to the idea and also see the benefits that could come with it.
Mm. What about your own country, France?
Yes. So France is a very centralized country. So it's always very complicated to explain federalism. I think when you're born German, it's something that is a bit easier to grasp. The main thing that is said about federalism is that every powers will go to Brussels, and it's really not the case. It's not the plan. Like, centralization is the opposite of a federal state, because the idea of a federal state is that you allocate decision-making powers at the level that is, one, the most efficient to take decision and implement them, and two, the closest to the citizen. So a lot of federalism is actually decentralization more than centralization. So sure, you pull out some resources and some powers at the European level, like foreign policy, like the monetary union we already have, but actually a lot of things don't make sense at the European level, and they shouldn't be there.
Mm. So France is not that negative towards the idea of federalism, you think? Or
I think there's a lot of misconception about the term among the general public. And when you explain what federalism is, you get better approval rates than when you just say the word, because it's a bit foreign to our political culture. President Macron said he was a federalist. Whether this is the case, we can debate that in another podcast. But it is something at least some parties in France say they're in favor of. I'm thinking also the Greens. So it's still there on the public debate. It's just not the majority opinion.
How important do you think that the bigger countries in the European Union are pro this development?
So for treaty change, you need half of the country to start the process. And technically, we have half of the country in board to do this. You have the major, biggest country on board, which is very important for the process. But I think the magic and the whole goal of the European Union is that the biggest country do not decide. Maybe I'm not the best place to say that because I'm French. But I really, truly believe that one of the importance of the European Union is that we are one. So we're united, so we are united in our diversity, but every voice counts.
What are your views on the countries outside the European Union, countries that we can, of course, take Ukraine and then other countries in that area, Moldova, Georgia, or then also Western Balkan countries that are not members right now, but that they want to become members? So what do they think about these things, and what do you think, and the organization that you represent, about letting them into the European Union?
We see a lot of demand for entering the European Union, and this has been the case for quite some time. 20 years ago, we pledged to the Western Balkans that they would be part of the European family. Since then, not much happened. You can see the last enlargement was Croatia on 1st of July 2013. That was 10 years ago. So we can say enlargement was really not a priority for the European Union, but it was always a priority for those countries. Jeff was always in favor of enlargement. We were in favor of enlargement to Ukraine, to Moldova, to Georgia, before it became very mainstream. I have to say, we launched a petition on 1st of March to request that, and also more energy in Western Balkan enlargement and foreign and defense policy. And 1st of March was before Georgia and Moldova actually applied to the European Union. So this has been a very long-term request and campaign of Jeff Europe. For years, we have said they would have a European path, and at the time, we were thought to be very original on this, and now it's the common opinion, and I'm very happy about this. But enlargement has been a long struggle of the European Union because it's the best tool we have to bring democracy and peace on the continent. The European Union was never meant to be a club of the rich of Western countries. That was never the point. The point was to unite and put peace on the entire continent, and that includes Western Balkans, that includes Ukraine, Georgia, Moldova, and they want to join. They want to join not just for the European single market, because when they are given access, they still request political inclusion. So, like, now we have the European political community that Emmanuel Macron launched. It's very intergovernmental and not something Jeff loves very much. But you can see that there's a demand for political integration of this country. So it goes beyond the market. It goes that they want to get in the value project we are, the peace project we are, and also the power project we are towards our third countries.
Mm. How do you see, if you shall describe a bit about the sentiments about among European citizens in different countries, how do they view, if you are familiar with polls or with sentiments among Europeans, how they think about these processes in the European Union, and as you just described, the crisis driving the development. Are they pro for it? Are they for it, or are they protesting? Or how would you describe the feelings around among people in the European Union countries?
On enlargement, you could see in the polls that people were more and more against it until the war of aggression against Ukraine. And then since then, it's going up, the approval rates. And the reason is not because people, not just because people feel for Ukraine, because they do. It's also, and I would say mainly because we talk about the topic, because we explain what enlargement is, and we understand why they want in, and why it's also interesting for us to get them as members. So by talking about a topic, you know, you become more familiar, and of course you become more positive towards it. You have a better grasp at the pros and cons, and it's also easier to get your own opinion.
Mm. So knowledge helps sentiments in a way that you're saying. So your organization, you are doing what you call civic education. Yes. You are doing, you are explaining things. And this is, of course, to young people mostly. So how would you, on a general level, say that the EU citizens are the lacking knowledge? How knowledgeable are they, and also young people, and where do they get their knowledge from? And if they don't know about things, what would you suggest that you do in order to make people things become more clarified?
I mean, the whole reason we're doing a civic education, it was civic education is lacking on the European Union, but also in large in the curriculum in schools. And we want to give young citizens the keys to understand what are their rights and how does it work. Because once you know how it works and what are your rights and why we're doing this, then you can have an informed opinion. You can still be against the project, you can still be against federalism or enlargement or any other topic, but at least you know why. What we don't want is people to be against because they don't know. So that's why we do Europe at School. Across Europe, we go to school, high schools, hospitals. We go to the beach in the summer, Europe in vacation. So, and this is very important. And this is lacking in a lot of countries, if not all. And citizens, they will not look for information because they have other things to do. It's not a priority of their life. Why would it be? Like, I don't think we have to think they don't know. We have to help them find information by making it extremely easy for them to find it. If it's hard, no one will do it. I'm not going to look for information on a topic that is not very interesting for me and that I don't feel has a huge impact on my life unless it's very easy. And that's also the role of the media. And it's not so much European Union in the media. And that also has an impact on how citizens think it's important or not in their lives.
And young Europeans that you are meeting when you are doing all these things, how do they react? And I know it's not possible to describe young Europeans in one or two terms and say that they are all alike, because they're not. But can you tell me a bit about the people that you meet and about young Europeans in general and how they see the European Union?
Yeah, I think you did the right disclaimer. Then when we do civic education, and I did like tens and tens of it, you meet people are rather interested because it's peer-to-peer knowledge. So they're like, okay, someone like me is interested in this topic. And also, you know, the first thing you do is sit on the table and like, you know, create a safe space for young people to feel like this is not a lecture like any other. It's about non-formal education. It's also about people learning from themselves and giving keys also in terms of digital literacy. And people are quite open to discussion. They like to debate. They just don't have so much the opportunity to debate politics at school or outside of it. And most of them are very happy where we were here. I rarely had any negative feeling about us coming. And usually after an hour, the negative feeling, if there was any, are just gone.
What about the European institutions and how the EU itself handle how EU handles crises and developments and things, and how the whole organization of the European Union works? Because it's of course to tackle a crisis, to find solutions, to do all things, you need institutions and you need to know how to work. In order to do that, how do you see that development, and how do you evaluate the European Union as when you're looking at their institutions?
When the institutions, they are bound by treaties, so to some extent they can't change so much. They have to stay within the boundaries that were created. The European Parliament has more and more powers, but it's not the co-legislator at the same footing than the Council of the European Union, and there's nothing we can change about it as long as we don't change the treaties. I think the Commission has taken more initiative also since COVID, and it's good. It's what we want to see. It's the executive of the European Union. They have the possibility, and the Parliament doesn't, by the way, have the possibility to put forward laws and using it to change actually what is happening in everyday life of people. I think we all felt that the COVID vaccine was a big improvement in our lives. I think it's also concrete steps that we can show. On Ukraine, we have been also very pleased to see what institutions have done. I think more can still be done. But there is leadership on this question, at least. And then on getting ready for enlargement, etc., I think people are more cautious because opening the treaties is scary, but it's necessary. It was never about making something easy and nice. It's about making something complicated because it's good. So I think we also need to accept challenge as the European Union. Not something's going to be easy. We learn it through crisis, but we also need to learn that crises, they're going to come. So we need to be ready for them instead of like doing things at the very last minute at 3 or 4 a.m. between governments. Maybe we could get ready for the next crisis because there will be more. And we know, I mean, just the climate crisis is there. So we need to be ready as a collective to have a democratic, but also opinion that is able to make the right decision for its citizens.
Let's then talk about democracy in the European Union, because many Norwegians, they have arguments about democracy and how democracy works. But you can tell us, how do you see democracy in the European Union? How does it work, and what are the best things about it, and what are the things that you think should be even better?
Well, over the course of history of the European Union, there has been more and more democracy inside the EU. I think this is the path we're following. The European Parliament was not elected directly by citizen at the beginning. It's only going to be the 10th time it's elected next year. So sure, it's every 5 years, so it's still quite some time. But you have to think that everything takes time and democracy is never given. It's also about participation. So if citizens do not participate, then democracy is also in danger. In terms of democracy, I think the European Union could do much more for its member states. We see Hungary, then Poland, and now we're also seeing Greece, because Greece has the worst media freedom, according to Reporters Without Borders, of the entire Union, below Hungary. And there are very few rankings you wish to be behind Hungary, especially on democracy concerns. So we could do more, and the European Commission has not done enough on this. It's necessary to have a mechanism beyond the one we have to make sure there's recommendation and they're followed. There were some improvements with now freezing of funds, because that's what works. And it's important also for European citizens across the board that their money doesn't go to corruption projects, just as a normal safeguard.
What do you think are the main things that European Union can do in order to improve democracy and improve participation?
I mean, for participation, it's to improve the civic education, I think. For now, most citizens are either unaware of the European election or not extremely inclined to go. We're doing 50% now. They're thinking of voting, maybe 60%. It's better than the forecasts we had 5 years ago. So in a way, we're higher, and hopefully the polls will be right on that, and participation will be higher next year in June. But I think the European Union has to be more strict about rule of law concerns in national democracies, and also act very fast, because on the mechanism to freeze funds that we have, it took more than a year to the Commission from where the moment it was decided to the moment they edited guidelines to the moment and then froze funds for Hungary. And we cannot wait, because democracy cannot wait either. The more we wait to act on this type of things, the more leeway dictatorship has. The European Parliament has voted that Hungary is no longer full democracy. I mean, it's huge. It's one of the members. And then we also get, we lose our credibility towards third countries, also towards enlargement countries, because we say, oh, you should reform your rule of law, you should reform this and that. And then they're like, well, I'm not so much worse than Hungary. And it's also blocking the entire process. You see, in the treaties, there's an article 7, that says that we can remove the vote of a country for this type of issues. And it's been years now that both Hungary and Poland are in this process, because we had never thought that two countries at the same time could have rule of law issues. Mm. So we're blocked because of unanimity, because to remove the vote, you need to have every other country voting. And of course, they're supporting each other. So Poland will never vote for Hungary to lose its vote, and vice versa. So we're stuck. So we need to change also to amend this and be able to move forward. Also because Hungary and Poland are now going to have the presidency of the Council of the European Union in the coming years. So it's going to be very challenging for these topics.
Hmm. Let's move on to Norway. I know that you are having to know people in Norway, and also that you speak Swedish, so you can follow follow debates, at least in Sweden. So what are your opinion and contact, if you shall describe that easily, with Norwegian youth?
Yes, so in the board of JEF Europe, I'm the contact person for JEF Norway, so Europeisk Ungdom. So we have a section, it's one of our biggest sections, by the way, and they're doing amazing work, so check it out. But I'm talking to a lot of Norwegians through that. I also know more about the Norwegian debate than most French people. And yes, I can read the news. I think in Norway, there's this idea that, you know, why change things? The thing is, Norway is one of the most democratic countries in the world. It always ranks so well, but democracy is not fully there, because you have to keep, to abide by the laws and the rules that the European Union does without being able to sit at the table and decide together. And that creates a lot of issues that then goes to the press with the egg debate of like having your wishes not taken into account because you're not there. And it's not that it's against Norway, it's just that no one thought about that. And no one thought about that because no one at the table was there to say it. And yes, you're an amazing democracy, but you're also lacking so much democracy by not taking part in the European Union, because you have to accept everything. And we're also losing out on a lot of input Norway could have. I think maybe Hungary and Poland and dealing with those issues might not have been that bad if Norway had been there and had advocated at the table for democracy also in foreign affairs. So I think it's a double thing. Norway needs the EU and the EU needs Norway.
Hmm. What are the main topics you think will be important if the European Union should be discussed in Norway, which it is not at the moment? But what do you think will interest, then we can also say again, young people, because the young people that you know and that your organization are working with, you are working with younger people. So what do you think will be of interest to discuss in Norway about the European Union?
I think what I just said about democracy is one point that's very important for people to understand, because Norway alone doesn't have so much impact in the EU and on the rest of the world. Two, because we have major topics to take care of. The climate crisis, it's not going to solve itself, and we need to work together and we need to go past all the issues we have currently. We saw also for the full-scale invasion of Ukraine that we need to be together to provide weapons, to provide assistance, to also support civil society there in the future. It's impossible to stay out. It's impossible to stay alone. It's the moment to take a decision. And I believe that the debate in Norway is going to get increasingly on this topic, because we see in Iceland that now more than half of the people want to join the EU. So the debate is going to happen there, and I think it's also going to trickle down to Norway.
Mm-hmm. You also said something in the interview that I thought was very good. You said that the European Union is not perfect, and you spent most of your days criticizing the European Union, but that is what politics is about. So it's about improving the system you live in. So can you just elaborate a bit on that? Because I think what you're also saying, of course, is that that breaking up the European Union is not an option, even though Brexit happened. You say that you need to improve the system instead of getting out of it, but you can elaborate a bit.
I think Brexit speaks for itself in terms of not working out so much for the UK. And also it showed how much the EU can actually unite. And I don't really believe another country will follow that route. Yeah, exactly. I spend my days criticizing the EU more than I plead for its existence, let's say. But that's the debate we need to have, right? What type of Europe do we want to have? Because the debate whether or not we want to have a European Union, for me, it's a question of the past. It's like, you don't debate, do you want Norway or not? Norway is there, right? It's like, what type of Norway you want? What are the goals you want to achieve with your country? And I think the European Union is the same. Sure, you can question its existence, or you can get up and try to change it so it fits your purpose. And the European Union is far from being perfect. That's the whole question Jeff is about. We're in for federalism because we don't think the European Union is good enough right now. But we believe in the project. So we work tirelessly day and night. We have this saying that says, sleep less, Europe more, which is very much the state I am in doing this podcast. But it's really important, right? Things are not going to change without you. So you have to stand up for what you want. And we want a European Union that is full of solidarity. We want a European Union that is full of strength as well and can make our values of human rights and democracy strong on the world stage. We want to be a beacon of human rights. But for that to happen, you need to reform. You need to enlarge. And I think there's also a misconception about what federalism is. Like, Norway joining the EU is part of a federalist project. As long as this has not happened, my duty is not done.
Mm-hmm. My last question will be, we are constantly in Norway, I guess all countries are doing that, but thinking about what does the European Union think about us, and you kind of, what is their impression, and why shouldn't they be very concerned about us and like to talk to us a lot? But you said that the sad truth is that the European Union doesn't think a lot about Norway. And to turn that around and to look at that more closely, would that say that Norway is more and more, well, treated like a third party country? That's one question, one way to see it. And the other thing is that the European Union is so preoccupied with lots of other things that Norway in itself, and the issue of Norway joining or not joining, is not a big thing, nothing that really concerns the European Union. What do you think? What did you mean by this comment?
Yeah, I think it's a question of how you project yourself in something. I told you when we had the interview the first time, I went to Sweden for my Erasmus because I did not even consider Norway, because it was not in my thinking of possibilities, because it was not in the EU. It's not that I didn't like Norway, it's just it did not occur to me I could go there. And I could, just didn't think about it. And I think it sums up a lot the European Union relationship to Norway. You're there, we're there, but since you're not in, we don't have you at the center of our existence, which to some extent makes sense, because Malta is more interesting to follow because they have a vote and they have an opinion and they can voice it and they're represented. And that's what Norway is missing. So for the benefit of Norwegians, they need to have a voice. And I don't think Norway is treated as third country, but I think it's more an afterthought. Ah, yes, and let's go and get what Norway. It's not that I wouldn't say it's that the European Union forgets about it, but it's just something that is of secret importance because it's not a member. But we value the relationship with Norway. It's just that it's not something we discuss so much. I was asked, how is Norway viewed in terms of the profit with oil and gas and following the full-scale invasion of Ukraine? I was like, well, there were maybe two articles in the press about that. So it's not like we have a big debate about it. Because again, we don't think so much outside of the pressing topics, which are our members and our future members. And the day Norway wants to join the EU, or at least has the debate, then it will come back in the midst of being at the center of the European information.
Hmm. Well, we'll have to see if that happens. So, but for the time being, we are doing these podcasts for Civita in order to try to get some knowledge on the table. So, thanks for joining me today, Christelle. It's been nice talking to you again.
Same. Thank you for having me.
And if you like Liberal Halvtime, you can rate us and recommend us or give us feedback using Mathilde@Civita.no or my colleague Eirik@Civita.no. Thanks for listening and welcome back.
Du hører på Liberal Halvtime, en podcast fra Tankesmien Civita.